So how you been, man?
Chill, man.
Chill?
Semi-retired.
Semi-retired? You're still working, right?
Here and there.
Last we chat, you were working on the 2023 report for your company, right?
Yeah, I did.
What's the name of the company?
We have no company.
What is it? A collective?
Yeah, a collective.
It's a collective, okay.
Yeah, it's called Team Rocket Research.
Team Rocket Research, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then actually last time we talked, it was when the whole scandal with SBF.
Yeah, that's...
Not SPV. A lot of SPs like coming around.
Long time ago, right?
Yeah, it feels like forever.
On the crypto timeline, it's quite long ago.
It's super long. It's but only been, 6 months or so, or less than that even, right?
I think it's
seven, eight months now.
And since then, we had the banking collapse, which is still ongoing, right?
Yeah, well, apparently still ongoing, which we don't know what's going to happen to that.
Well, we'll see.
But it seems like, at least in the news cycle, investment cycle, mm-hmm. I don't know about actual crypto prices, but it's been very quiet, right?
Yeah, and now I have friends who just, ask me if it's the right time to sell the stocks. So they have been invested in a stock market, and they have seen the portfolios dropping like 50%. And they're like, you know what? Maybe I should just sell everything and put it into my business, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it's a good time to sell.
What about you personally, your positions?
I'm still holding it.
Okay.
We do like a routine housekeeping, we sell what we think it's not going to come to fruition. Yeah. But I think the most important thing is still to stay invested.
Stay invested, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the whole macro environment changed, right? So I think the paradigm has shifted. Probably most likely interest rates are going to persist, right? So
money is going to be more expensive, right?
Yeah.
Cost of capital. So you don't have VCs flinging around huge amounts.
Yeah.
Moving forward, I think, which was the norm, right? Like before, everyone would be like, oh, SoftBank is invested like 9 digits here and there. And it's like a norm.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, of course, that's the norm. And then, but everything seems to have shifted in terms of risk capital to at least there's a new narrative, AI, right?
Yeah. But I think, for example, in Southeast Asia, people have to grapple with, a lot of startups being scams in the end.
Yeah.
Because now we see news of, founders who raised like hundreds of millions, like even in the US, right? What was this startup? This startup that was sold to JP Morgan.
I have not been following the cycle.
It seems like they faked the numbers, right?
They
didn't have like 4 million actual users.
Oh, I remember. I vaguely remember this.
Right, yes, it was fintech like, company.
Yeah, I remember this was in a news cycle at least 6 months ago or something.
Right. So I think it's bad news if you are in Forbes or Fortune, 50, like 40 under 40 or 30 under 30. Don't get on that list.
Yeah, that was the big brouhaha, right? There was all these guys in Forbes 30 under 30, and then some high percentage of them were involved in scams or under investigation.
Right? So SBF was definitely on that list. So yeah, I think the whole macro environment is very uncertain, but in a sense, I think people who have been in the markets might have seen it coming.
Yeah.
I mean, so I was working with this company that was funded by YC, back in Dubai. That was 2020.
Yeah. Construction company.
Yeah, construction tech company. And, the first time they heard about COVID, that was when they started to cut salaries. So, and then fast forward to 2022, 2023, people are starting to bitch now, oh, you know what? my salary is halved, or I'm losing my job. And, you know, man, what's so unusual about that? Like, you had a job since COVID, so you should be thankful, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because things are just getting worse, you know, after COVID. And, you know, people were kind of bullish because, you know, oh, the economy is opening up again. But, you know, I think if you look at e-commerce businesses, you know, obviously the volume has tanked because people are not staying at home anymore.
Sales volume, you're talking about revenue from the companies, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think what worked in COVID may not be working right now. And I think, you know, with AI entering the picture, I think that's going to change even more rapidly.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, what aspect though? Because there's two camps of thought here where a lot of the academics, I mean, at least I think from an academic standpoint, they talk more in terms of actual AGI actuation, actual, like we're reaching AGI. But then I guess you talk about applied AI and what that can do, right? I think, and the main problems with AI are data and the actual hardware, the architecture, right? And I think there seems to be enough where that can be extended very far, but we don't know the effects of that or how that really changes the world. But and at the same time, it doesn't, it's not as, we're not like leaping to a sci-fi future where we have like a Jarvis or like a talking AI to you yet, right?
Well, I think if you are an AI startup right now, you're probably too late to the game because, you know, the best example would be Mark Zuckerberg, right?
Yeah.
At the height of the metaverse, you know, like, you know, everyone in crypto was talking about the future, which is the metaverse.
Yeah.
And then he decided to do it. And then what happened, right?
Mm.
People got fired.
Well, yeah.
Facebook's stock.
They weren't lacking in cash.
So I think, any new startup in this space, you know, would be quite fortunate to be raising funds right now. But maybe if you were funded by your own government, that might work.
Yeah.
But I think it's generally too late to be entering this space if you're looking for investment, right? Because it has taken like so much time for OpenAI to come to this, you know, level of maturity.
I'd have to disagree though, because I think that was shared in Momentum Works group, right? The chat with all the AI companies that were funded. I mean, all the funding is funneling into there. And will it be like the last cycle where a lot of these don't pan out? Probably.
Right.
But I do think there's still room. I mean, if you're trying to build an open AI, yes, I agree. It's too late for that.
It's too late. You're behind the curve, right?
Yeah, but there is enough, I think at least my thesis would be there's enough room where you can build a defensible moat in the way you train these large language models, right? On the actual, it's gathering those unique data sets. That's what causes the AI to hallucinate. And I think I invested in one of these companies. I'm looking at a second company in this space. So I think there is room possibly, but by and large, if you're trying to, if your thesis is along this, you know, using the same architecture, the same language models, then I think you're right. By and large, it's too late. And ultimately, what the only defining thing between OpenAI and why it was successful was just money, right? Ultimately.
Right.
So it's just throwing money. And even the way it was trained, it was just like I think the Times did a piece where just using like Kenyan labor where they paid them $2 an hour or something to train the models, right? So it was something crazy like that. Let's talk about crypto, and then does that shift? Does like because AI's taken a spotlight,
right?
What has changed? Are prices still down? Where's the innovation, or what are you investing in? Because I remember at the end of 2022, you were talking about the gaming space,
right?
I guess there was some overlap to metaverse. Mm-hmm. I don't remember really, and then you were thinking how that evolves into 2023, but it seems that that's just completely out of the overdo now, or at least the conversation.
Well, we're just entering Q2, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing that more games are being launched this quarter. In fact, most of the projects that we have invested in, they have launched already. So either open access or, you know, live beta. So I think that's a good sign. I think more projects will enter the fray. But games, like projects that are just launching right now, I don't think they will come to fruition, like even in this cycle, because the typical, you know, game development cycle would take, you know, easily a year or a year and a half, depending on how complex the game is, right?
Yeah.
So that's that. And I think one more thesis that we have for 2023 was the casino, the decentralized casino thesis, which actually played out.
Oh, really?
So, you know, stake.com, right? Which is...
No, you got to help me explain that.
So it's based in the US, and I think people know stake.com because of Drake, right?
Yeah.
So he's heavily promoting stake.com. And the thing about stake.com is that people actually top up their account using crypto.
Yeah.
So that's how they actually grew, like, really large and rather quickly as well.
Mm.
So I think this space is definitely booming, and we've seen quite a few projects like catching up in this space. Yeah, so we're pretty excited about that.
Okay, so you've shifted your, at least where you're investing is from, so you're still looking at games?
It's still a game, right? I mean,
okay,
like, it's
still a game.
I mean, gambling is just a category under gaming. I mean, that's how we would place it anyways.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what you mean. So it's still gaming. So, but the main focus within gaming is this kind of
right
casino type.
I mean, we had our doubts at first, but you know, we just do what we have done. You know, I've done in Web 2, right, which is to track the basics, right.
Yeah.
So, what is your monthly traffic like? What is your bounce rate?
Yeah.
How long do players stay in your page? And I think that is the fundamentals that. A lot of crypto projects are not looking into, right?
Really?
Yeah. So surprisingly, like when you go on Twitter, and we do a lot of research on Twitter, right? People tend to shill projects that they claim has traction, but when you check the traffic, it's like, you know, 5,000 visits a month, you know, and this project that we're talking about, they are doing 5 million visits a month.
Yeah.
You know, easily more than 1 million players.
Mm.
And you can track like a lot of information on chain anyways. So like how much deposits they have taken.
Yeah.
And yeah. So we just base our investment thesis on that.
So where's the gap then? Because I mean, are you saying this because investors in the space are not sophisticated, so they don't look at these kind of things? And so this is kind of like a short-term advantage you guys are taking advantage of?
I think... maybe the market has somewhat or is somewhat shifting because a lot of projects that have taken off in the past is mainly based on hype, right? So when
That's
influencers
true.
Talk about it, like, for example, Dogecoin, right,
yeah,
being the most infamous
because
when Elon changed the logo on Twitter, you know, the bluebird
flew, right?
Yeah, I mean, it flew. And now we're moving towards more fundamentals because... You know, we are a huge fan of projects that make real revenue. And the truth is that when you actually track these projects that make real revenue, many of them have not actually run. In fact, I mean, in terms of price, right? Like, they are way behind. So by and large, I think a lot of projects in the space are still very much driven on hype.
Mm.
But... You know, with games and stuff, I think you have to look at the fundamentals. So at the end of the day, how many players you have, how many site visits do you have? So I think it's all coming back to the fundamentals again. And I think, thesis is somewhat on point.
And were those the main findings when your end of your 2022 report was just to focus on gaming, look at fundamentals? Essentially just how a business runs, but...
Well, we are very GameFi and DeFi focused, you know, as a collective.
Okay.
So the reason behind that is because, you know, you can track all the information. It's not really dependent on the founder of the project to hype it up, right?
Mm.
Because, for example, I think in the early days, people got really hyped up about Ethereum because of Vitalik, right?
What is that?
Vitalik Buterin, the founder.
Yeah.
And then later on, you know, people got really hyped on Ethereum because of the ICOs.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
And then after that, it was DeFi. So you essentially have to build value on your project.
Yeah.
Instead of just it running on vaporware, right?
Yeah. And so what, I guess, and that value is just the enjoyment of the game, or is there more ties into the real world or actually making real money or
So it has to be revenue driven. So how much fees do your project actually bring in?
Yeah.
You know, not so much about how many followers you have or how much your coin is traded on the exchanges, right?
Yeah.
So I think that eventually there will be a shift towards that. And I think we have seen this in the layer ones and layer twos, right? So I think last year, you had a lot of people who have gone crazy, like, oh, you know what, Ethereum is going to lose to, you know, other protocols,
like Solana,
you know, and Avalanche and stuff like that, right? But now we're seeing value flowing back into Ethereum. Why? Because you have the most developers, you know, it's a very wide developer base. People build on Ethereum.
This has nothing to do with the fundamentals of blockchain in terms of what distributed networks or security or... Because, mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, that was why everyone was pushing to Solana, right? Because you get the amount of transactions you do is greater.
Well, the reason why Solana and Avalanche actually even took off, right? Number one, they were actually VC backed.
Yeah.
So they had like huge amounts of money to back them in the first place. And then second was that they actually airdropped and they gave a lot of incentives by means of printing more tokens.
A typical VC type.
Right. So it's just like throwing money to get growth, right?
Yeah.
But now that the money is sort of or almost running out.
Yeah.
Then your growth is stalled, right? Whereas if you look at Ethereum, they have pretty much, you know, grown in a way where you could consider it to be organic, right? Because people like building on it, therefore they're putting all their resources onto that, you know, rather than, let's say, a team from one of those leading L1s come to you and say, hey, we'll give you like, you know, $1 million, could you build on our platform, right?
Yeah.
So... we'll see.
So what's the, I mean, if this is the case, I mean, there's of course the blockchain element of Ethereum,
it
being more stable, it built tangible value first, I guess, to some degree, right? It's more transactions than Bitcoin, right? Most developers are there first, kind of a moat. But then if you put this combined with GameFi, how does this differ from traditional game studios, traditional gaming companies? Isn't it just the same thing? Or like, why do we need this layer of blockchain? What does it actually bring to the table? Why does it matter?
Well, if you look at the most popular games out there today, right? Let's say Counter-Strike, for example. People spend hundreds of millions of dollars.
Is it that much?
Yeah. It's that much.
Hundreds of millions?
On skins, you know.
I know. Yeah. I played.
Everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's only one game. So people are already transacting value, you know, in these, you know, Web2 ecosystem
Roblox
games, right? So they do spend a lot of money already. But the thing is that when they leave the platform, they cannot bring those items that they have purchased with them, right? So there is no ownership. And I think the same goes, you know, in terms of like, let's say, for example, in the context of social media, right?
Yeah.
You cannot bring your account somewhere else. And, you know, in fact, if you were found to be against community rules, you'll be banned, right?
Yeah.
So you might have spent a lot of money to build your influence and then you get fucked.
That happens. Or like if you get hacked or something like this, you can lose all your value. Yeah.
So I think that is the value that Web3 gaming is, you know, bringing into this space. I think mainly ownership and the ability for you to
portability.
Actually, to set, like you could sell it on chain without anyone's permission, right?
Oh, I see.
Like if you own, say, for example, items in a game, you could sell it and you don't need the permission of someone to do it.
Well, it's less friction.
Less friction, for sure.
Because, I mean, you could still do that through auctions on Web2 today, right?
Well, if it's not permitted, let's say, later on, you know, because there is no one else to basically, I mean, okay, so who owns Counter-Strike? The publisher of the game, right?
Yeah, Valve.
So they can decide to basically step in and say, no, you cannot sell.
True. Okay, so yeah, so basically it's a more of a permanent economy.
Right, so I think the Web3 gaming economy would be very interesting. And I think we have seen the first of its kind in terms of Axie Infinity.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember that game.
Is it still around? Is it still?
It's still around. It's still around.
Transacting and, high volumes.
The coin itself, I think, the Axie coin itself, I think, is worth north of $2 billion still.
After the hack, but Ronin hack and everything.
So Ronin is not really related. It's another coin on another chain, right? But yeah, I mean, at the peak, Axie Infinity was definitely like, I think, 40 billion or something. So it has dropped like 95%. So I think by most estimates, a lot of players have actually left.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they're still around. I mean, they have like healthy amount of treasury as well. They continue to reinvest. But here's the thing about games, right? It could give you a good, you know, couple of years where players just keep coming, or it could just die off like rather quickly. So I think it brings us to the discussion of, so what next after, you know, the layer ones and layer twos? Because I think you could basically equate the layers, the layer ones and layer twos to your operating systems, right?
Yeah.
So your Mac OS or your Windows. And, you know, it's pretty much it, right? And you have Linux.
Yeah.
So you don't really have that many players. And I think the same thing will be happening for your layers, your layer ones or layer twos. And then, you know, what next? It will have to be the software that's built on those, on your operating system, right?
Yeah.
So meaning in Web3 speak, it would be dApps.
Okay.
Right? But investing into dApps is a lot more trickier. But, you know, I think all the information is available out there. Yeah. So meaning how many players you have, how many users you have, how many transactions you have on chain. So it shows how much activity your dApp actually brings in and how much money you actually make. So I think it's more transparent, but it also makes it like more difficult to invest. But that's where I think the next billion dollars or next trillion dollars of value will be created.
Can you explain dApps a bit more?
So essentially it's called a decentralized application, right?
Yeah.
I think the most basic, at the most basic level, you allow users to connect their crypto wallet, and basically they're able to perform a couple of tasks, right? They could make payments. They could make payments and then own whatever you know, NFT you have, you know, items that you have, you know, in the game and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that is the most basic level, right?
Yeah. And so you're describing basically the like infrastructure needed to power gaming,
right?
In the Web3 space, essentially.
Right.
And how is that currently looking? It's very fragmented right now. Mm-hmm. Is it pushing towards centralization? Where like, because I guess what your thesis is saying is you envision a world where all games are connected by some layer.
Right. I think it is already happening. So I think by and large most people would use MetaMask these days, right? So that is already a standard, you know, being set.
What is MetaMask?
MetaMask is a crypto wallet,
which
you could set up on your phone. You keep the seed phrase for yourself and then you can immediately load crypto onto it, right? It's different versus you know, having an exchange wallet like Coinbase, for example, right? Because, you know, Coinbase is centralized.
Yeah.
You need to be wary, for example, if the exchange would go bust, right?
I think we talked about this last year where there was a shift from the centralized exchange wallets onto these where you have your own key.
Right.
And then so it's harder, as long as you don't lose the key, it's hard to actually lose your wallet.
Right. But you, I think traditionally the exchanges are very useful, especially when you're transferring crypto tokens. Like, you know, if you want to store Ethereum and Bitcoin and whatnot, I mean, storing it on an exchange could basically lessen your burden, right? Like you don't have to worry about losing your seed phrase, for example, right?
Unless if you were...
Right, but as you enter the Web3 economy, let's say you're playing games or you're trading NFTs or you are, say, interacting with a DeFi protocol where you want to stake your coins and earn interest on it, right?
Yeah.
Then, you know, you would need like a wallet like MetaMask.
Mm.
Okay. Because the exchange is not able to provide that kind of, you know.
Well, because they don't list it as
right.
One of the coins to trade, I guess, right?
Also, I mean, like storage of NFTs, not many exchanges are providing that ability.
Before the whole, like, can you say bubble popped?
Bubble.
there were those NFT marketplaces that were being developed. And so what happened? They're gone now? Or?
So I was quite active in this NFT marketplace called OpenSea.
Yeah, OpenSea.
I was also trading a lot on...
The volumes were huge on that.
Yeah. There's this NBA Top Shot.
Okay.
I think like people who go crazy over basketball, they could relate, right? So these two, NBA Top Shot was the most centralized because you could sell NFTs, but at one point you couldn't withdraw your money, your fiat value, and it would take days and you need to do like, you know, KYC. So, I mean, they had that, those issues. Fast forward today, I think a lot of users have left the platform.
Yeah, so no value. Okay, so you're saying there that infrastructure is gone, but I guess it's more useful if gaming really does take off then, right? Because then those kind of platforms would have real inherent value.
Well, it either has to be games or, you know, decentralized social media is also developing right now. Because if you look at the history of the internet, so if you imagine that you have a computer, you have Windows, you have Mac, and then you have the internet, right? But before the internet, you know, you had games.
Yeah, games was
huge. And you had applications and stuff too, right?
Yeah.
So if you take that into account, then, you know, the next logical move in this space would be to look out for emerging social media that's built on Web3.
Yeah. Okay. What is your probabilistic gut bet? What do you think probabilistically is more realistic to happen first? Or what's going to be the big push first, games or more social media and Web3?
I think it will come like together, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the community, especially the Web3 community, although Facebook and Google have less restrictions now to advertise like crypto and Web3 projects, it still isn't like friction free, right? You have to like, you know, pass certain KYCs and jump through a couple of loops.
Yeah.
And it's just not native enough. So if a new platform were to come, it would definitely take like a huge chunk of the market share away, you know, and, you know, running ads for native, you know, Web3 people will be much easier. You get the right target audience too, right? I mean, in the beginning.
In theory, it's like all perfectly on a blockchain if you have access to the data, right? Yeah.
So in the beginning, what got what helped Facebook take off was games, right? The Facebook games.
It was a big part of,
right. So it could be a merge, like, you know, decentralized social media paired with games, because there isn't a dominant dApp store today.
Yeah.
So it could be a combination of everything.
I don't know if like history repeats itself in the same way, but I think human behaviors do. And if you think about when we were, at least our generation, not Gen Z, right? When we were starting out with games, identity is largely divorced. In fact, you have a fake name, right? Anonymous names or avatars, right? And then you have your gaming name, which is nothing tied to the real life. And that's probably because by and large, back then the internet was wide open, like the Wild Wild West. And, you know, you could actually blog openly too. Like now you would never think someone blogs openly about their personal feelings, but like, or write on people's walls, right? Like everything's closed off now. And so it seems that, well, gaming was there first, and then with the rise of, you know, social media, then identities formed around social media, which was very open, then became more closed and private now. So it seems, you know, it could coincide together, but I think... If it were to follow.
And then after social media came, I think before you could actually transfer value already, right? Like you had a couple of internet-based money transfer companies, I think, right? Yeah. Like eCash and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then after like social media blew up and then, you know, came payments.
Yeah.
So I think then, you know, it might make the payments part of crypto much larger and making DeFi relevant again.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to say, but I...
Because you don't have enough people working in Web3 today, right? You don't have people, like investors, real, like people who call themselves as investors, they probably have like less than a couple hundred dollars, you know, stored in their wallets.
Yeah.
And you don't really have a real economy that way, right?
Yeah.
But once you start to make your living, let's say on social media, on decentralized social media, or, you know, by playing Web3 games, then you have like real savings, and that's when, you know, the real need for decentralized finance comes in.
Yeah.
So you first need to build the economy.
Yeah.
And not like the sham economy that we had before, right?
Yeah.
Like ICOs, they would cash out into the bank accounts anyways.
Yeah.
And then they don't work on the project.
Yeah. So I have two questions then we can probably wrap up. But,
right.
But I'm thinking like, so does that mean you still continue to focus on gaming? And I mean, like, has anything changed then from last year till now, or what has changed? And then does your focus fully into Web3 still? Is it still going to be as big? Are we just an off cycle where it's just like a little hiccup, and then we're going to see another surge again? Mm-hmm. We're just waiting for the next breakout, and what would that kind of be?
I think what has changed is our faith in the centralized exchanges. So I think last year, many of us had like huge amounts of money, you know, stored in Celsius and FTX, but, you know, fortunately we removed it, right? Yeah. Like a couple months before they went bust. And today, you know, like we went fully on chain, you know, we're not storing it on any exchange unless, you know, we need to trade it.
Yeah.
So that has changed, but I think by and large, we still find a lot of value being created in terms of semi decentralized entities, right? So projects that come into the space, not fully decentralized yet.
Yeah.
They're partially centralized as well. I think that is good because right now in this space, there is a lot of debate on, okay, so if you are a decentralized project, how do you manage your team, right? Like, so people like to talk about governance these days. If you have like enough tokens, you could vote for certain actions.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have seen so many projects like trying to vote on even the most minute detail.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense, right? Because then your speed of execution would be like really slow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there needs to be a good mix. It's just like, you know, if you have a kid and you want your kid to grow up, you cannot give like 100% freedom for your kid first, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's how like projects should develop anyways. It cannot be like from the get-go, you are fully decentralized, community voting 100% of the time, right?
Yeah, you won't get anything done probably.
And then again, because even if you have a good governance, you know, like behind your project, if you don't have like a good team to execute on that, it's still like it's meaningless.
Yeah.
So I think that has changed for us. And I think, but the thesis is still relevant, I think.
Yeah.
We're still looking for the next, you know, billion people to enter the space.
Yeah.
You know, either gaming or social media, right?
Okay.
I mean, where else can you generate value?
On the internet. AI.
Well, we had like a few AI coins that made a run. You know, we made like some money on that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, it's just like generative art.
Yeah.
And then the coin, you know, just ran up.
Yeah.
But it's because of hype as well, right?
So you're just trading it really for quick.
Yeah.
So, but
overall, that's not really our focus too.
But overall, you're still well positioned, well capitalized, despite the drops in value.
Yeah, and
the coins.
Hopefully, you know, come like Q3, we'll start like looking for more VC deals again.
What does that mean? Like, what VCs investing in the space? Or?
Yeah, investing like, you know, into like pre-seed or angel.
Are you connecting with the VCs now and talking with them? I think that's an important conversation to probably have.
No, actually, we just want to speak to the projects directly.
Okay, so I guess
like
that's where your advantage is.
Our team would just like reach out to whatever projects that are, you know, like pretty new. We'll contact them on their Twitter accounts and stuff.
So it's like early stage. You focus on building the deal flow, the pipeline.
Right.
Kind of see what comes through when you get traction. Then probably
our reasoning behind this, like why we would be only starting Q3, is because so we want to wait for like the previous generation of like funded projects to die off first, or to see that we're still around.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we expect that these projects will also need time to build. And yeah. Let's just assume that 2023 wouldn't be the bull market that we all imagine.
Yeah.
Or let's say it's around mid of 2024, you know, after the Fed pivots, etc.
Yeah.
Going into massive money printing again, then, you know, if the project were to take off in 2024, then you will have to invest by Q3.
I mean, in theory, even earlier. I mean, I think this is kind of product market.
Well, too early then, you know, if you're talking about like pre-seed or seed stage, you'll probably run out of funds before you even manage to launch.
True. Okay, so you're really trying to time this.
Right. So okay. I think Q3, maximum Q4 is like a sweet spot.
And how do you think about in terms of the right amount? Like, how are you pairing risk, investment size, and deal flow? Like, how much do you let into your portfolio?
It's hard to say, man. Do you have a good formula for that?
I mean, I think about it a lot. Because I don't have enough in my net worth to get the numbers. I ideally want to have to go for quality, and I swing when I only sure.
Yeah, but the thing about quality, right, is that it's. I think it should be very entrepreneur-focused.
So you invest in a good person, right? It's more like, are you willing to go on a journey with this person because of the quality of the person?
Right.
I mean, because it's going to twist and turn and they might run out of money still, but it's but like, you know, they have what it takes because you kind of seen it so many times. Right. And at least for me in my network, that's what I kind of focused on. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to people who are not in my network and I'm tempted to make my first investment outside of my network. So that might be interesting.
Ka-ching.
I don't know. Statistically, all my money's gone already, probably. So, but that's the nature of the game, right? So, so last question then. Mm-hmm. What? So, from last year to now, then what? I think one of the more interesting pieces would be regulation. Then, what has evolved? What has changed? And where is it heading? How's it going to settle in with the current Web3 ecosystem?
I think the momentum has probably shifted from the West to the East, because in June, we're fully expecting for Hong Kong to launch their first crypto exchange after so many years, right? Because China was the first to ban.
Same country, isn't it?
Yeah, China was the first to ban Bitcoin, right?
Yeah,
that was like back in 2016 or 17.
How does that work if China banned it, but then Hong Kong is pursuing
it? Well, they banned Bitcoin trading, but they didn't ban Bitcoin ownership.
I see.
So I think a lot of exchanges have applied for licenses to operate in Hong Kong. And I think that might be the bigger news that people have missed.
Okay.
Because VC money will probably come out from there moving forward.
At least risk capital from the region. Do you think Western VC money can actually do that? Because if it's Hong Kong, it's technically China. And with the macro the geopolitical environment today, it's a bit awkward, right? I mean, is that something in your consideration or?
Well, I mean, if it comes to that.
Well, you think so. I mean, you're talking about you're investing your own money.
Right.
And your net worth, specifically for you, right? So something, it's a variable to think about, no?
Right.
Unless you don't mind.
But I think I'm basically sharing the China news and from this point of view, right? Where if one country or one region decides to go against crypto, like for example, US right now is pretty much anti-crypto, right?
Well, they're supposed to regulate Coinbase, right? Isn't that like
there are a lot of like lawsuits being thrown around like to so many projects these days.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't have any money to defend yourself, you're pretty much fucked.
Yeah.
So I think VCs should be worried about that, right?
Yeah.
But you know, if and when Hong Kong opens up, you know, then new money will flow into the space. And I think by and large, it would be good for all the entire space, right?
Yeah.
So Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, everything would start to move up.
Yeah.
Because I think it has been quite some time where, you know, the market is very focused on what's happening in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And now it's back here again.
So all the Twitterverse of crypto,
start tweeting in Chinese. Yeah.
So the focus is all like kind of Asia, this kind
right.
of
right.
Yeah. Actually, there's a few big conferences moving to this part of the world in 2023, right?
I'm not too sure. I don't go to conferences.
Okay. Yeah.
The last one I went was in Seoul. Yeah. Charged me like $1,000 for a ticket.
Yeah.
And then it was like we were at a peak of the bear market in 2018, I think. And the conference was like 25% full.
Yeah. Well, Yeah. So what other key insights or like what can you say that you are worried about with regulation or like how it shapes up or like what's your preference? Like,
well, I think we have seen this, or rather I've seen this in the early days, right? Like 2011, 2012, when I first started to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, governments around the world were like, oh, we're going to ban Bitcoin. We don't like Bitcoin, stuff like that, right? And it never really left the space, I think.
Yeah.
I think only when FTX went full legit in the US, that was when everyone was saying that, oh, you know what, crypto could work, right? Yeah. But then it went bust. And now regulation is back again.
Correct.
So what we did back then was just to store it in our own crypto wallets.
Mm.
So we can do the same again.
So you're not too, essentially what you're saying, you're not too worried about regulation then?
We're not too worried.
Doesn't it give some type of unlock or benefit or acceleration of adoption if there's some type of regulation though?
Yeah, if China says okay, then, you know, party's back on, right?
Yeah. And what does it affect anything? Like what, do you more noise comes in or at least more
I don't
more
think
talent
it will
comes
affect
in?
Much. I think only projects that will be, that are based in the US right now would probably feel the heat. Yeah. And they would be probably convinced to move to, like, you know, places like Dubai, for example, or to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Like companies will probably move out.
You're talking what in terms of
crypto-specific companies, like companies who
how they incorporate physically,
who have incorporated there. Yeah. You know, they have the team members there, and more importantly, they have issued their tokens. Because if you didn't issue your token, you probably wouldn't have any problem with the SEC, right?
Yeah, correct.
But if you have issued a token, then
you're pretty much the target. That's true. Okay.
So we might also see like more companies not issuing tokens moving forward and just building the space, providing value. I mean, like, so MetaMask has millions of users and they don't have a coin yet.
Yeah.
And people still use it, right?
I mean, that's the best way to probably go about things.
Right.
So
just make your profit in crypto and that's it and pay your taxes.
Yeah, that's true. And then, like, I guess if things are more clear when you have really tangible value, then you could issue coins later anyway.
Yep. Right? There's no rush.
Instead of doing traditional financing, this kind of stuff.
Unless, of course, you know, you want to go for the market and you want to, you know, get subsidies. And so you just mint your own token and, you know, pay for your CAC.
So then what's the value prop of getting a VC involved then? Unless it's a shitcoin or, you know, a shit project.
Well, VCs, they have connections with, you know, major exchanges, and that could help, you know, increase your profile, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Because every project's, you know, dream is to get listed on Binance, for example, or Coinbase, right? Because once you're there, you know, you're hardly delisted, and that's like permanent liquidity for you.
Yeah.
If your treasury has a lot of those tokens, you could continuously sell it into the market.
Yeah.
And fund your business, right? I think that's the key point.
Yeah. Okay.
Because VC financing would, you know, run dry eventually, right?
So Especially, it's just an acceleration to a distribution point would then help.
I don't think like VCs will ever stop getting involved because although the cost of money is going up right now, but you know, you should see most of these. I mean, you should see the entry price for most of these VCs, especially when they get like those tokens for almost free.
Yeah.
And then they sell it like for a few bucks or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's good money, right?
Well, that's the old pump and dumps. Like that's the big complaint about VCs' involvement in this, right?
Right.
It's bad incentives.
So, I mean, unless the regulators coming, you know, if you think the regulators are coming after the VCs, then that's going to be bad news.
Yeah. Bad news in that you just remove some element of liquidity or acceleration.
So.
All right, man. Let's just take a pause here. Then we'll thank you for this test.
Get some beer.
Yeah. And, thank you for letting me be the guinea pig on the first test. I think I got some tweaking to do. But yeah, and then we'll catch up again.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.